Hi there, and welcome to the YM Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Shaw. The vision of this show is to educate and engage apostolic leaders just like you as you educate, engage, invest in, disciple the next generation of apostolic students and young adults. One of the ways you can support this show is by leaving us a star rating or a review in your favorite podcast app. And if you've been listening for any length of time, you already know the drill. The best way you can support this and any apostolic resource is by sharing this with your friends. That's right. Share this on Facebook, post it on Twitter, post it on Instagram, everyone's apostolic, MySpace. I mean, whatever social media platform you're on, share this episode. And then when you're done making that like perfectly articulated post, hit send on this episode in your favorite text thread. Share this with as many leaders as you know. That's the best way you can support this show and anything that UPCI Youth Ministries puts out. And you're going to want to do it with this episode because we have none other than Brother Stan Gleason on the show, Assistant General Superintendent of the Western Zone of the UPCI, Bishop of the Life Church in Kansas City, Missouri. He has served on numerous boards. His amazing book, Follow to Lead, is a clarion call to all leaders out there to go out and make disciples and make discipleship the priority of our ministries. And on this particular interview, on this show today, he's here to talk to us about what life in ministry was like in his 20s, what he has learned, the things that he values most. It is so good, guys. Seriously, so good. You're going to want to listen to this more than once, and you're going to want to share this with everyone that you know. So, without any further ado, let's jump right into our conversation with Brother Stan Gleason.
Well, Brother Gleason, thank you so very much for being on the YM Leadership Podcast today. We're so grateful for your time, especially when it comes to the subject that we are dealing with today. This series is called Dear 25-Year-Old Me, and we're talking to experienced ministers and leaders like yourself, because the majority of the audience that listens to this show are young leaders and learning from you about the things that you navigated when you were in your 20s. I think it's going to be so helpful. But just to get us kind of started off, can you tell us what you were doing when you were 25 or just any point in your 20s? What was life and what was ministry and leadership like for you?
Sure. Well, it's a pleasure, Brother Shaw. And I'm not really a person who likes to look back. I'm always trying to look forward, but I don't mind this at all if it will help somebody. So I graduated from Bible college at the age of 21 in June of 78. I was married in November to the lovely, the beautiful, the gracious, the Queen Marlene of 45 years now of wedded bliss. And then we launched full-time ministry in February, full-time evangelist, evangelism. I thought it was evangelism, but it was more like evangelism, I'm sure. In fact, my pastor, he asked me what my plans were. And I said, well, I think I'm going to evangelize. I have an open door. With your blessing, I would like to do that. He said, oh, Stan, I'd hate to see you spread your mediocrity all over the country. Which wasn't exactly a ringing endorsement. Yeah.
No.
So 45 years later, I'm still spreading my mediocrity, even thinner on this podcast, by the way. So we evangelized for a year. And then we preached a youth revival in Columbus, Ohio. And the pastor asked us to come on staff. We prayed about it for a couple weeks. We had a great revival there. And so I became the youth pastor and assistant to the pastor. We were there for 3 years. And then at the age of 25, I was elected pastor of Apostolic Faith Church in Sturtevant, Wisconsin, which is Racine. It's the Racine, Wisconsin area. So 25, I'm pastoring, don't have a clue, but I'm swinging hard.
You know, this is the thing, because we talked to Brother Dean, as I mentioned before we hit recording. He was the episode before this one. And one of the things that I'm always kind of struck with is, you know, for your generation and Brother Dean's generation, there was no, you know, if you think of it like going into a swimming pool where you start off in the kind of the shallow end, and there was for your generation in the Pentecostal movement, it was, you get tossed into being a senior pastor, or, you know, you get tossed into full-time ministry in your 20s. And it must have been a tremendous amount of pressure. Did you feel the pressure? Were you aware of the pressure, or was it just like, this is the open door that God has and we're going to walk through it?
Yes, there was pressure and a lot of questions, even wondering if I'm suited for it at this season. Am I mature enough? Can I do it? And I talked to my father-in-law when I was considering this church had reached out to me and asked me to consider it. And they were looking at some other people as well. And I talked to my father-in-law, and he said, well, son, you know, this is what you're groomed for. This is what you've been raised and taught and trained to do. And he said, when you're assisting someone, you're on a team, and that's great, and you're learning, but you're laboring in another man's vineyard. But when you're the pastor, you're laboring in your own vineyard. And that was the terminology that he used for me.
Yeah.
But the thing that pushed me over the edge, and when I responded to the church and put my name in the hat, so to speak, was when he said, you can do it. And, you know, he was a pastor at that time. He was about 60 years old, and he'd been around preachers his whole life. And if he said, I can do it, I believed I could do it. It was his confidence in me that inspired me to take the plunge. So there was anxiety. There were a lot of questions, but we were excited, and like they say, the rest is history.
So what are some of the biggest, looking back over this season of ministry in your 20s, what were some of the biggest life and ministry lessons that you learned in that early season of ministry in life?
So for me, I had already settled what I believe.
Yeah.
I may not have understood all of my gifts at this point, but I knew I was apostolic to the core. And I knew I had married the right girl. This is a big, big thing. It's I can't overstate it. I had friends who within the next 10 years left not only our organization, but left the truth, left what we love, the message of Acts 2:38, the oneness of God, apostolic identity, the mission. And so that was tough. I had to say goodbye. And so what I'm saying is you have to make sure that, okay, here's the thing. Number one, you got to keep sin out of your life.
Yeah.
Because morality will influence, if not dictate, your theology. So that's the number one thing. You got to keep sin out of your life. That's a big, big deal. The friends that I had to cut off, I have high suspicions. Nothing I could ever prove, and I'm not interested in proving it. But I think this is a problem for them. And I listened to my wife, and she said, he's no good. He's no good. You need to, I mean, this is friends for years, but just going a different direction, going a different path. And I thank God for my wife, and she really helped me. So keep sin out of your life. Secondly, you have to love the truth. I made up my mind. I love the truth. And how did I know I loved it? When these guys confronted me, I defended it with tears and passion. And when I hear it preached, it gets me up on my feet and I shout and I cry. I love the truth because it's made me free. The truth has been good to me. The apostolic truth has been good to me. It's been good to my marriage. It's been good to my children, who now love it as much, if not more, than I do. And then I think this sort of, I've already said it, but let me say it a little different way. You have to allow only the right voices to speak into your life, and make sure you're going to the right sources for your questions. Make sure that you're listening to the right voices when you have questions. So I think those are some of the major decisions. And, you know, the air I was breathing when I was 25. So I hope that helps.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, because this is the third interview we've done on this subject. We interviewed Brother Graham and then Brother Dean and now you. And it always seems that at some point in this particular season, every guest we have had on the show looks back and there was a crucible or a test that happened in their 20s, whether it was in a relationship, like whether it was the health of, you know, health of their relationship, health of their marriage or their children, or it was, and I think Brother Graham spoke about this as well, the he talked about family that left the apostolic faith. And it was just him, and he was by himself, and he had to stand alone. And for you, it was your friends. And that's one of the things that's, you know, being able to have the honor and privilege of doing these interviews, that's the thing that has been standing out, is that for everyone that we've had in their 20s, there was this test that came along where you had to decide very young. You know, I'm not in my 20s, haven't been for quite some time, and I'm clinging to my 30s, but that'll be over in another year and a half, and I'll be in my 40s, but it seems like at a very young age, looking back in my 20s, I was like, man, I was young. I was started preaching and I was 17, became a youth pastor at 19. And I was like, man, I was really, really young. But there were these tests that God allowed to just swing into my young adulthood that were the test, that if I didn't pass that test, I don't know where I would be today. And it seems like for every guest that we've had here, that there is that crucible that God will let you walk through. What do you think about it? Do you think that's an accurate statement at all? That God, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you have to pass these tests before promotion can come, because God has to know if he can trust you with more. And so he'll allow pain to come into your life. And, you know, my biggest test actually was not the direction that some of my friends went. And by the way, basically three friends, okay? And for every friend, that walked away, I had 10 that were remaining faithful. I say 10, that's an exaggerated number, but I was not without friends, let me tell you. But I would say the greatest test of my ministry early on was from 25 to 30. This church that I was elected pastor had a very unique culture. It was a small family-owned and operated church. And I did not have the right last name. And I just thought everybody wanted revival. I just thought everybody, you know, wanted to have baptisms every Sunday. And they hadn't baptized anybody in 2 years when we arrived. And my first 3 months, we baptized 16. In fact, the Sunday that they gathered soon after we arrived, that I had the baptistry cleaned out and cleaned up and filled up. It had been a storage bin for musical instruments, and it was a spider condo. And, you know, I cleaned all that out, and I had one of the charter members, one of the stockholders, well, what's going on with the baptistry? I said, well, you know, we might baptize today. You know, it sort of is the mission of the church. I thought, if he's dumb enough to ask that question, I'm going to be a little snarky in a kind Christian way in my response. And so when we baptized 16, it hit the fan because they could see their power center sort of evaporating. And it put me on a course where I had to face very carnal, staid, stoic, saved, sanctified, justified, petrified saints who did not want revival, did not want the church to grow. They wanted a power center. And so it took 5 years, but we broke that. And the church went from 50 to 100 in 5 years. We didn't break any records. And today it's a thriving apostolic church. It has probably a $5, $6 million campus. Jim Schumacher's the pastor now, and he's done very well with it. And so it makes me feel like it was worth my blood, sweat, tears, and pain. And there's a lot of stories I could tell, but it's a crucible for sure. But you have to pass that test, and you have to be willing to forgive. I mean, just look at the life of Joseph. You know, you're going to be hurt. You know, have a nice day. You're going to be hurt. And you have to decide, you know, am I going to get even? Am I going to get revenge? Or am I going to be Christ-like and forgive so that I can move on to the next thing that he has for me? Because if you choose bitterness and you choose offense, you're done. You mark an X on your calendar. That's the day you die. You're dead. You're over. You know, we'll see you later. But if you'll be Christ-like, you know, Paul said, I want to know him and the fellowship of his suffering. The only way to have fellowship with Jesus Christ is through suffering. Sometimes at the hands of brethren, Paul suffered at the hands of false brethren. And you won't have to be in the ministry long to get there. So pass the test, have fellowship with Jesus, take it to prayer. Don't get even, don't take it to social media, take it to prayer and see what God will produce in your life. I think what God does with it is he turns it into anointing and he turns it into spiritual authority. I've just seen this too many times. So that's my theology of pain.
That's it's so good. I hope everyone hits rewind on that part of the episode. And I mean, it's so easy to do with Spotify or Apple. You can just tap that scroll back 15-second button and listen to that again. Because I do think you're right. Offenses will come. Bitterness threatens us all at various times. And it comes down to a choice of how much am I going to let this affect me? And that is a hard choice to often make, because there is a certain sense of justification that you get through staying angry. And you feel there the deception of the devil can be, well, if I let this go, then you know, justice will never be done, the wrong will never be righted, and I will be taken advantage of, or whatever narrative is in your spirit at that particular time. But God always has a way of taking care of things when we release them into his hands. I think that's so good. Looking back, what are some things that you did that you are proud of in your 20s? And you've already kind of referenced some of them in some of these stories, you said you got a lot more stories to tell of things that where you had to choices you had to make. We want to hear them. We really do want to hear them. So what are some things you're proud of?
Well, yeah, I think all of life, whether it's 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, you want to add value. You want to add value. Everything you touch should improve. Everything you put your hand on should not fall apart, but it should be healed, restored, recovered, reinvented, and taken to a whole new place. And I've always loved that. I've enjoyed doing that. For example, when I was a youth pastor, a church of maybe 150, they didn't have, so I had a job description that did not include Bible quizzing, but they didn't have Bible quizzing. So I started Bible quizzing and put the church on the map in the district, Ohio district, through Bible quizzing. Understand now that we were up against Norm Pasley and my best friend in the ministry.
The machine.
And
yes.
We still miss him. We miss him every day. He was an hour and a half south of me. And that's one of the reasons I felt it was the will of God to go to Ohio, because I love Norman so much. And we were on the youth committee together in Ohio. He was the secretary. I was a sectional youth guy, and it was great days. But we started quizzing, so that added value. They didn't have a choir, and I can do music. I could, by the grace of God, I think I could go be a music minister today. I really do. And I can get music out of people. My wife plays really well. We could recruit, put a band together. I love to sing. She loves to sing. Anyway, we started a choir, a Sunday night choir, every Sunday night. We started a men's quartet. I mean, how can you be apostolic without a men's quartet? That's what I'm talking about. So we had a men's quartet. That wasn't in my job description. Nobody was teaching Bible studies. Jack Yance was just coming out with, you know, Jeff Arnold said, Yance's charts. So we started Bible studies, and we're still using Yance's charts. I used it this
week.
Awesome. Yeah.
That's amazing.
We started teaching Bible studies. I was only there 3 years, but after 3 years, my wife and I discipled five families, came to the Lord, obeyed the gospel, mom, dad, kids. They had never done epic Bible story dramas in the church. My church culture, ABI, and my church culture, there was a lot of drama in the church, but not the kind of drama that's, you know, that ruins a church. I'm talking about,
yeah.
I'm talking about epic Bible dramas. And so we did a few of those.
Yeah.
And there's something about doing a drama that brings a church together. And you need everything. You need promotion. You need script. You need artists. You need actors. You need seamstresses. You need set people. It's incredible. And of course, I'd probably be embarrassed to watch the drama today, but we thought it was awesome. And it was just amazing. So I would say that it doesn't matter what decade or season of your ministry, look for ways, places, and people to add value. And you will add the most value where you are the most valuable. So determine what your gifts are, what your skills are, what you can bring to the table. There's no sense in trying to be good at something you're not good at. Be good at what you're good at. And don't worry about your weaknesses. Go with your strengths, whatever they are. You know, relations, people skills, communication, developing teams, you know, whatever it is. And bring that to the table because it's needed. So am I answering the question?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, you are. And I guess the part two to this one is you've told us some things that you did, adding value, you know, stepping outside the job description and using your gifts to just raise the overall value and increase your impact in the local church. I guess this is kind of a different question. And what are some things that you wish you would have done in your 20s? Maybe you started in your 30s or 40s, but looking back, it's hindsight's always 20/20. But looking back, you go, you know what? If I would have started that a little bit earlier, I think that would have made my life or my ministry or my family a little bit better, a little bit healthier. What would that be? Or what would those things be?
Brother Shaw, I really don't have a lot of regrets. That's not to say I didn't make mistakes. I made plenty of mistakes, but I didn't make big mistakes. You know, made a lot of negotiable mistakes, we'll say. You know, we raised four children. I pastored for 40 years. I was on the youth committee in Ohio. I was also on the youth committee in Wisconsin. And if you ever have a chance to serve on a team like that in a district, get involved in your district. It'll bless you. It'll bless your church. I think anybody that has that chance and throws it away is making a big mistake. My son Caleb was just elected as our sectional youth guy. And I told him, I said, you're going to love it. He's 25. You're going to love being on the youth committee and you'll add value to that. My wife was a great barometer in our family health. If I was doing a little bit too much and not really taking time for the family, that's an occupational hazard that we have to be mindful when we're raising children. I never wanted to sacrifice my family on the altar of ministry. I did not want my children to feel like they were playing second fiddle to the church, to anything we were doing. We included them. We brought them along. We invested in them. We celebrated them. And to this day, I think they would say it was a privilege and honor to grow up in a pastor's home. We have to tell you one story. So
yeah, no, of course.
When we came to Kansas City, I was 31, and you know, Justin was about five or six. Marissa was 3 or 4, and there was a kid in the church. Every Sunday after church, we'd get in the car, and Justin would just be crying. Dad, he beat me up again. He punched me. He kicked me. And I'm thinking, what am I going to do? I'm the new pastor. I don't want to tell these people their son is ridiculous and needs a good whipping out behind the barn, you know? And so this went on for weeks. Now, Justin, I wouldn't let him fight. I said, son, you cannot retaliate. You have to walk away, tell the teacher. You know, it never happened when I was there. So one Sunday morning, I'd had enough of it. And I said, Justin, what I'm getting ready to tell you is not in the Bible. I said, can you make one of these? He doubled up his fist. He looked at it. He said, yeah. I said, okay, I'm dropping him off at his Sunday school class. I said, you walk in there. You go up to that kid. You hit him right there. Just walk right up to him, hit him right there as hard as you can. And
that's amazing.
I'm not advising this. I'm not advising.
No,
this.
No. Yeah, no. This is descriptive. It's not prescriptive.
That's correct, sir. And so I said, "You let them have it as hard as you can." This kid was like, he thought he was Bruce Lee, kung fu, judo, karate dude. And he was yeah. karate chopping all the kids. So Justin walks in there, lets the kid have it. That was the last I heard of it.
Love it.
That was the end of it. It was beautiful.
That's and, amazing.
I guess he laid hands on him suddenly. But anyway, I don't know why that came to mind.
That's so good. Well, you know, I think, you know, for your son's sake, that they remember those moments when, you know, dad, despite all the other jobs he has in his life, he defended me.
Yeah.
He defends me. And, you know, it's funny. It brought back memory. My son had something similar. He goes to a Christian reformed school, and he was same thing. And so I have really short arms, so I'm not a great boxer at all. I get arms like a T-Rex. So
got a 21 inch reach.
Short. I got a low center. I got a low, yeah, 21 inch. That's both arms spread out like a wing. But I got a low center of gravity, and so I can wrestle a little bit. So I showed him how to grapple him. And I said, buddy, just tell him, you know, if he keeps picking on you, that you will be predestined to keep putting him down in the parking lot like that. If he does. And he did. He put him right down on the ground. He came, he was like, Dad, that guy hasn't bothered me anymore. It's,
that's
it's
it.
So much fun.
That's
last
being
question.
A dad.
And I, it is. It absolutely is. So this is our last question. And I appreciate your time so much. This has been such a great conversation. The last question is, it's kind of a thought experiment, and it's impossible to do in reality, but it's kind of a thought experiment. And that is, if you could imagine that you had the opportunity to sit down and have coffee with a 25-year-old Stan Gleason, and you had all of the wisdom and knowledge that you have now, but you had the opportunity to sit down, because right now on this show, there's going to be a 25-year-old youth pastor on his way to work, driving in his car or pulling up to the church office if he's got the blessing and privilege to be able to be in full-time ministry. And you're going to be talking directly to them, and they're going to identify with the different stories you've told. They feel like they're walking a little bit in your shoes right now. And so if you had the opportunity to sit down and have a conversation with a 25-year-old version of yourself, close out the show by just telling us what you would say.
I would say, Stan, you are going to love your life. Make sure that you live with nothing to prove, nothing to lose, nothing to hide. Keep all of your accounts short. Keep all of your relationships up to date and healthy. Do not allow dysfunctional people. Don't allow toxic people into your life. It's okay to walk away from them. Jesus walked away 24 times when you resonate the four gospels, or he let people walk away from ridiculous people. Don't be distracted to the right hand or to the left. I'm going to quote G.A. Mangan to my 25-year-old self, who was asked, if you could do your life all over again, what would you change? He said, I wouldn't spend as much time with the nuts. I think that's Greek for idiots. And believe me, they'll want to pull you down, distract you, and the low return people, hand them off to somebody else. Love your wife. And that's the greatest gift you can give to your children, is to love their mother like Christ loved the church. You get one shot, Stan. So don't blow this. Don't follow the path of some of your friends you did the right thing when you were in high school and you worked at the steakhouse and your best friend worked there with you and he got high every night. He was a church kid. He got high every night and he invited you to go every night and you never did it one time, not one time. You made the right choices then when you were 16, 17, and 18. And it set a path for you. So you're on a good path. Well, one more thing, Stan. Would you miss $25 a week if you saved it? No, you wouldn't, would you? Put away $25 a week for the next 40 years. It'll be worth $1 million if you'll do that. You'll never miss it. And we know Jesus is coming soon, but you better prepare for retirement because it'll be here sooner than you think. So don't let your theology of the imminent return of Christ sort of handcuff or sabotage your retirement. When you get to be 65, Stan, you'll want to be in relationship with your wife. You don't want to share your grandchildren with step people, you know, your ex, your former. That's messy. Don't do that. Stay with Marlene. Have your own grandchildren. Everybody will come over for Christmas and Thanksgiving. If you pay now, you can play later. But if you play now, you will be paying later. So make sure you're paying at the right time and the right season. And that's right now. And you're going to love your life if you'll do these things.